Welcome to the Chasing Tomorrow podcast, episode 134. Today is going to be a fun episode. I'm super excited about it. We're going to talk to a guy who, in my world, seems to be one of the most interesting men in the world and can do just a little bit of everything. Today we have Michael Krajicek, and Michael has gone from music school to hot dog vendor to owning and operating a running shoe company. So we're going to jump into all of this. Michael, welcome to the Chasing Tomorrow podcast. How are you doing today?
Hey, what's up, Don? How are you doing, sir? Joe, it's good to see your faces and talk to you today. I'm living the dream.
Yeah, that's what we're going to talk about.
And let's go.
How do we get there? I think, you know, both Don and I have run in your shoes, and we've gone to, you know, parties in your shoes, and they're just like beautiful and they're fun. And, you know, you're fitting into this interesting place in a very, very big and crowded, noisy market. But we'll get there in a minute. You know, we got to find the path how you got there. You know, what we love hearing is more and more about the people who make these decisions. So yeah, Don sort of touched a little bit on your background, Michael. Tell us, you know, your story. You know, how did you end up here?
I suppose it's a long and winding road. It went everywhere. I initially got sober at 26 years old. I'm from the deep south in a town called Lake Charles, Louisiana. It's a good old-fashioned blue-collar kick-ass town, and I freaking loved growing up there. And when I decided to get sober, that's the place that I got sober. I went back home and knew that some things weren't just ticking right, and that wasn't the man I wanted to be. It wasn't the life I wanted to live. And then kind of couldn't really think about getting myself, you know, a traditional job. I had a music education at that point, but I wasn't doing too much with my music degree, although I played a lot of music. And I really had to come up with something for myself. And I had some experience in my early 20s working at a hot dog place in New Orleans. And so I thought, this is it. I got to go all in. I'm going to open up my own operation. I'm going to be the hot dog guy. And the way that I looked at myself was there's this guy named John Hartford, banjo playing, riverboat captain. I wrote the song Gentle on My Mind. And, you know, just listen to him, John Hartford. He'll make you feel good. And I liked the idea of the novelty life. So I just went head in. I was like, I'm going to be the hot dog guy. I'm going to live the novelty life. Start up my hot dog operation, grew it to a brick and mortar, and then kind of fell out of love with the restaurant business as I was getting mentally healthy, cognitively healthy, and physically healthy. I wanted to invest my entire well-being and my life into health and wellness. And so I pivoted into playing music, bars and casinos for a while to kind of understand what I wanted to do with my life. And in that period of time, post-restaurant and pre-footwear company, I was just like really searching for my why. What did I want to do? And it was always running shoes. I just had this super deep, dark secret dream that I wanted to be a footwear designer. I wanted to have a shoe company. And I didn't like those thoughts. I didn't like the thought of not being able to do it. I liked the thought of doing it and not worrying about what would happen. And so I just moved to Austin and got a job at a running store at a place called Rogue, worked the shoe floor, wrote the business plan, and everything since then has just been a product of pure momentum, keeping going, learning from the previous mistakes. It's just been a wild ride.
Yeah, and it's been one. You know, I've known you for a couple of years now, and I've known your company, Treyu, for a few years as well. And it's been very interesting to follow because it has the vibe of a guy that, you know, didn't have a background in design or know what. So talk to us. I've heard this story, and it's fascinating to me of when you decided and sat down and decided, like, I want to be the running shoe guy now. Mm. What steps did you take? Like, what did you have to learn? Like, it sounds like you didn't know anything. So talk to us through like how you figured out the resources, the connections, what you had to do and where you had to go to basically create this company from the ground up.
I was training for, at the time, I fell in love. The initial spark happened when I was training for my first race, which was an Ironman triathlon. And it was actually my second race because I did a little Olympic tri to kind of just kind of run through the motions. But I went head first and signed up for an Ironman, and I was buying some Cliftons. I think it was the Clifton 4 from Hoka. I had some Saucony Kinvaras that were two completely different polarized shoes. And the marketing of both of them was like fundamentally different. And I was just uneducated and just honestly just a little confused as to what a competent shoe for the task was. And that just got me thinking. That was kind of like this really cool spark. I was also in some Adidas Takumi Sens. Some Newton Fates came prior to that. Like there was like, that was there, all of these shoe models that were different and varying kind of were always like making me think like, and I would go research them and like, what's the marketing here and what are they for? And what are the different mechanics of the geometries that they're incorporating into the shoe and why do they work and why do they don't? So it was really educational in the beginning. That turned into a love and a fascination of where they came from and how people are doing them and the people responsible for them and the history of them. And then I finished that Ironman and started training for, you know, CIM. I think it was one of the years, 2018 or 2019. I think it was 18. And that was just a really great training experience. I was digging deep and running on this track, McNeese State University, by myself, you know, three times a week and doing all the prescribed runs. And just that experience was life-changing. And so I had this association with the products and I had this association with running was literally changing my life. And the experience was changing my life and I liked it. I just wanted it. And so I just made a decision. Just like in, you know, recovery, the first thing you do is make a decision. And I just made a decision that for better or for worse, this was what I was going to do. I bought a book on, it's like how to build a shoe company. I did all the Google research. I did all the things, just a lot of research. And I didn't really know anything. And that was the beauty of being from that small Southwest Louisiana town is that I was naive and there was fewer barriers than what was actually in real life. I've since learned that there are many barriers that I probably should have learned prior. But I didn't know what they were and nobody told me that there were barriers. I was only told to live my life. You only get one of them as far as, you know, this iteration of everything. So I was just going to say at the end of the day, if I don't do this, I'm going to be unhappy.
Yeah. So, but there's a lot of stuff you're going to get interested in your life, right? You're not going to mm-hmm. always start a company just based on something you're interested in. Cause I mean, then, you know, mm-hmm. to be for all of us, right? So it's a big leap because I think what we tend to do when we get very interested in something, we go deep and learn all the features and capabilities and the benefits and we defend it. And, you know, we wear it or we use it or we eat it or we drive in it. And like, that's what we get connected to. It doesn't necessarily get connected to the, well, maybe I should build that.
Mm.
So, but maybe, I don't know, maybe there was something deeper in that what the building was going to help, like what were you wanting to bring back to the world through the building of the product, not just becoming, you know, a connoisseur of a running shoe, for example.
Yeah, that's a good one. Actually, I actually think it wasn't something that I necessarily wanted to do. It's actually more of something I wanted to honor. And I wanted to honor the breakfast tables when I was growing up, we always talked about how are we going to create value. We never really talked about what college you're going to go to and what you're going to study. my grandfather, my uncle, and, you know, were, you know, fabulous engineers. And my dad was a fabulous thinker. And we were always building things, my dad was building, you know, the way that things felt in his dad's company, my grandpa. And my grandpa was a chemical engineer, and my brother is probably one of the most fabulous entrepreneurs I've ever known. One of the brightest entrepreneurs I've ever known. And I didn't know anything different. I was just honoring the way that I was taught to honor things, which is, if you believe in something and it makes you feel good, then I also tied that into, let's build it and then create value from it. And that's the ultimate goal. Like, the reason I never did music is because I never believed I had any value to share. I was a talented musician. I'm still a talented musician, but I didn't have anything that I think I really needed to say. Yeah. And so I didn't pursue that. And if had I needed to say something, I would have pursued it. I needed to say something in, I'm a guy growing up in Louisiana. I'm confused about running shoes. I love the sport. I love the way it makes me feel. I want to contribute to this, and I want to contribute to it as a student that honors the industry and honors what I'm learning and honors the journey of it all. That's where I was. Yeah. And I was thinking, if anything, the value is going to be in the pursuit.
Mm-hmm. So what, if you're saying you didn't have anything, you know, to say in music, and I'd be curious, what do you think your brand now, Atreyu, says? And what do you get out of that brand voice that you might not have gotten out of music or other ventures in your life?
If I was a musician, I would have been a folk musician, and I would have written songs in a very kind of interesting way. And it just would have been something completely different. With Atreyu, it was different, though. It's like, I believe in simplicity. Like, that to me is what it's all about. And that's what I've really cornerstone the messaging and the brand experience around, is this concept of honoring simplicity. And underneath it, there's so many different ideas that are nested in that. But I was confused. I was confused as to what to do. I wanted simplicity. And a lot of it is actually a product of what I learned in sobriety. And it's the concepts of what I learned in sobriety. For example, I once heard, what we practice, we become. And although I knew that I didn't have the character and the... I wasn't a successful person when I got sober. I could tell you what a successful person did and ate and loved and everything. And so the way that I practiced what I wanted to become was, I just started really small. And I was like, successful people set their alarms. I'm pretty sure that most of them do. So I just started setting my alarms. I started reading, because successful people like to learn. So every day for 30 minutes. And I literally wrote a book before Atreyu. It's about 80 pages long. And it's called The Daily Checklist for a Busy Mind. And it's essentially, it's trying to balance, I think it's 7 different ideas. It's been like 4 years since it. But it was, every day we should practice 7 things. And at the end of the day, if you have low self-esteem, then you're going to be all right. But here's a checklist. And it was, and I hope I get this right, it's, don't lie. In lying, what I mean by that is, practice exploring objectively the deeper levels of withholding information from ourselves. Like, in terms of, a white lie would be on like the trophic level of like the highest, like most superficial kind of level. Whereas like, understanding what we're thinking and we're feeling and being able to identify that would be the most honest thing we can do. So kind of taking some time to kind of like excavate those ideas. So don't lie, and then read, which was activating the brain, putting things into the brain. Meditate, which was basically objectively observing our thoughts to kind of counterbalance those two things, like read, meditate, and then do something active to kind of put that into the mix, do something selfless and to help somebody out, nourish a short-term goal and nourish a long-term goal. And nourish a long-term goal was kind of the bonus round where it was like, you've already done your long-term goals, because long-term goals are in the future and they're built off a series of small, tiny victories strung together in a meaningful way. I wrote an 80-page pamphlet on that. It had a wasp on it and everything. I wrote it like 3 weeks after I went to a Vipassana meditation, and I thought I was going to write a self-help book for people like me who at the end of every day thought that they were going to freak out and lose their shit. But it ended up being the idea of why I should build this footwear brand and why I can create these values into this brand. And so every day I'm trying to, when somebody buys a pair of shoes, I'm just trying to better understand how I can help them understand that what they're buying is a great experience where they can look inward. They don't have to leverage external things for internal things. And those are all the ideas that were into it. And it's very difficult, but that task to me is a lot of fun. Understanding the clarity in that message is very fun. And it's not clear now, and it's very, it takes a long time. It's not very palatable at first taste. But I'd rather spend my time trying to make that message clear, investing into footwear and running and endurance as a vehicle to deliver that message. And I would rather spend my time doing that than not doing that.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know, I guess, Don, we could just listen for the next hour. Michael can just keep talking. Very, very thoughtful. So I'm going to push on something though a little bit. If we go back in this sort of, because we'll stay in the apparel space and we won't go too far outside of that for today. Mm-hmm. At least, and we might get you back on for other things. And if you go back into the 60s when sort of outside stuff started to really take hold, and you know, you had the Camp 4 guys out in Yosemite, you know, making stuff because stuff didn't exist. And you know, we go through this life cycle. So the North Face, the Black Diamond guys, you know, Patagonia, sure. Mm-hmm. All of it started, you know, I don't really feel like I've connect as well with the Nike story, but it certainly was, you know, an outcrop of a similar kind of story. And so, but these companies, right, they capture the essence of this activity, because we're out doing these things because it does something to us, you know, biologically, emotionally, just we love it, right? Whether it's climbing a wall or running down, you know, a trail. And the problem, and, you know, we had, you know, this conversation, you know, in different times. But the problem is you go through this, right? As you go from, hey, I'm creating this passion project. I believe in it. I want to help people. I want to get there. But in this apparel, you know, industry, in sport especially, it's a really tough run, no pun intended here, because the manufacturing costs over time, the reach and distribution is really hard. And almost every one of those companies, you know, really Patagonia, really only one that really sort of held their own. And, you know, as a $1 billion entity, they still try to have a set of values. But I think that the key is, you know, you got to have a really long runway on it. You know, you can't, this isn't going to happen in a year or two if we set out on this path. And so as you think about, you know, look, I think there's a lot of people listening or not listening who would love the purity of what you're setting out to do and the why and want to participate. How do we get this so that, you know, actually was Don, was Kay Martin, who's the CEO of Boco, right? She left the apparel industry because it was such a problem. And Boco is a small company, but, you know, that's what she wants it to be. You know, some of the better hats in the industry. You know, how do we keep this stuff going, Michael, without at some point selling out? Because that's what happens at the end of the story.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a good one. And I'll answer that by there's this massive pull to be successful quick these days. And I fall into those pitfalls daily because as the cost of living and the quality of living becomes, you know, I'm not going to touch on that because I'm not an economist, but I do read a lot about it and I have my opinions about, it's easy for me to want to build something bigger so that I can build a better company. And it's easy to really want, not a better company, a more fruitful company for the employees and to build a bigger team and to create a bigger community and invest more into the marketing and invest more into the talent and curate talent, because it's hard. It's really hard doing this. It's like literally sometimes it feels like crawling over glass and that's just what it feels like. And honestly, there are times where it always feels like that. And then one day I wake up and I go, okay, let's just recheck. This is going to take time. And so I think we're compelled to move quicker than possible. But I think to answer the question about how do we not do that, I think that we actually define that in our values. I don't know at what point in time people have like the carrot dangled in front of them when the momentum's picking up and things are going well. I don't know what quite that feels like. I've never really been in a position to where I've ever really created something that has massively just been easy to take off. It's always been very tough, and it's always been, you know, put in one part work and get out about 0.9 output. I can get that close, but it's never like you're getting two out of it and let's go spend, you know what I'm trying to say? Like there's no like net proceeds throwing off on the work yet. It's just pure work. And I think at the end of the day, and that's me just answering it from like, all right, that's my objective kind of like, okay, maybe this is the playing field. And that's kind of my assumption of what it may or may not look like or feel like at this point in time. I don't really think too much about that stuff because I think it has everything to do with the person at the helm, or the people at the helm and how we set it up. I come from a very low self-esteem background. That was primarily why I did take to using chemicals and substances to make myself feel like I was good enough. And it worked every single time. And now that I don't have that, this is that thing. I do this because it makes me feel good. I do this because it builds my self-esteem. And I don't know what I'd do without it. So I, frankly speaking, I like the idea of growing to enhance the team to spread the message. But I would, even if there was ever this kind of future where, in theory, if we were to become like massively successful and somebody would like want to take it off my hands or something like that, I don't even know. I'm just painting that picture. It happens to people sometimes. I don't know what I would do if I didn't have it.
You'd go do another one.
I'd go do something else. And hopefully I would, do these same exact values in that regard, but I wouldn't stand to, I think that when that happens, there needs to be a fundamental realign of the values and kind of state that as a clear message. I think that's where kind of authenticity, you don't say that you're authentic. You just have to be authentic. And I think if the message is authentic, then it kind of can cut through the mustard. Like that's just the way that I see it. I hope that answers your question, but it's
it's good. There's no perfect in any of these answers, of course.
Yeah. To me, I don't think too much in the future. I think about feeling good today. And then when I think about the future, I don't feel very, very cool. Like it's not a cool feeling. Every time I'm in the future, there's unknowns and there's uncertainty. So I think I was taught, again, all of these are principles that I learned in these outpatient groups. We plan for the future, but we live in the present. Mm-hmm. And to me, my constant battle is living in the present. And this company is my teacher. I'm not telling it what to do. It's telling me, it's giving me opportunities. And I'm really just trying to kind of make sense of the inputs.
So as a businessman and, you know, an intellectual, you're learning as you go and you're being challenged as you go. So you just said that you're living in the moment, but as a business person, you also have to project outward and know where you're going and think through that. So how are you able to balance like living in the moment and learning, but also like guiding the ship and having an idea of where the heck you want it to go long term?
That's the finance hat, and I don't love that hat, and I have to wear it. And the good news is that I realized that I didn't have to think 5 years into the future. I could think about 2 years into the future. And so that's like 66% less anxiety. So then I was like, all right, how would I design 2 years? What would that look like? And then you just, I believe that I'm not much of the typical kind of art, music school creative. I'm very process driven. So it's quite easy for me to look at 2 years and then reverse engineer it. And then I'm going to say, like, if we buy X amount of shoes, we will need to finance this amount before we convert that on the cash. Like, so I do my homework. And so I can then go to the bank. I can then create a deck to kind of like present to the bank. To me, that's also creative because it's process driven. And I like the process. I'm all about process. Like, I save up for expensive furniture because I like the process of the designers that design the furniture. Not because I like expensive furniture. I don't believe in expensive furniture, but I own a lot of it because I save up for it, because I honor the designers behind it, because they were the guys and gals that that taught me about process. Music school taught me about process, you know.
Fancy espresso machines.
Exactly. What's the process? If we didn't love, like, why would we go spend quite a bit of money on espresso machines if we're not curious about the process? It's all process. Anybody who buys an expensive espresso machine and doesn't care about the process puts it on Craigslist 3 weeks later.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
When I stopped eating meat, I stopped smoking meat. And one of my favorite things about smoking meat was the process of knowing like the temperature and the time to the weight ratio and the fat ratio and like pulling out the science. And the closest thing I found to that process is espresso. And so you're exactly right. You have to really love the process behind some things.
And you asked me, Don, like, how did I do it? Like, what were like, there were two fundamental ideas that, or maybe there was a couple, there's a handful of fundamental rocks that I could skip from. The first thing was calling my brother, and he knew the process, and I needed to learn the process. And so we teamed up, and my brother is the co-owner of Atreyu, and he does his own thing. He's got his own day job, but that's a guy that I can go to check and balance my process at any given time, knowing that he's literally 9 years older ahead of me and 9 years ahead of me in business. It's fabulous. So it's so much fun. It's talking to Joe. We're talking about process. Joe is a guy that knows process, and you know, process in terms of running 100 miles and beyond. Like, if I'm going to run 100 miles, I'm going to ask you about what that is. So I think asking for help is the hardest thing we'll learn how to do. And we need to be able to ask for help and get that help, because it's all about excavating on the process. I didn't know how to design shoes. So my process was, I went to work at a running store. I asked everybody who came into the running store if they knew a shoe designer. Lo and behold, one of the reps for Saucony knew a shoe designer. So I called him up. We started tech packing. I understood the process of how to design. We went quite a long way through the base model, and I learned the process on Adobe Illustrator. It's fabulous. Mm-hmm. Now I get to design my own shoes from scratch because I honored the process. And same with accounting, same with finance, same with creative. To this day, I'm reading, you know, listening to ideas on branding and how that intersects with marketing and how not to confuse that. That to me is a process excavation. But I think that's one of the reasons why some people can make it to point B in a long chain of future events. But the next, it's just making that next step, making that next step. So I'm just a big fan of learning like that.
Yeah, I think that the, you know, curiosity you have, right, turns into the creative art. And then this structure you're referencing of process is, yeah, it's exploration, it's learning, it's satisfying a lot of, you know, the way our system likes to operate. You know, mm-hmm. you know human consciousness. Adam Grant did this interesting podcast this past week talking to a guy who studies animals, and you know, they're trying to compare how are we different, you know, and I think one of the ways is that the human turned into this creature that needs to create. It's what we do differently. We you know, most other animal classes, while they have skills, they don't actually, they plateau, and they're good with that. That's not a judgment at all. But the human being needs to create, really. It's, I think, innate in who we are and how the system works. And so what's always interesting to me, you know, especially your story and so many of the stories of what we've, you know, been able to listen to during this podcast have been people where it wasn't obvious that they were going to go down that path, you know, and there's nothing that would say that Michael would become this inspired creator who wants to go build companies and products and, you know. Because sometimes, you know, from where we start is where we think we end, but really there's so much capacity inside you. I think as you went through your journey, and of course, you know, you've learned a lot about yourself, have, you know, you said you have low self-esteem, but you have high productive output. And have you felt this somewhat of, you know, surprise at how capable you really are? As you lean into your various pursuits, you're like, oh, wow, look at that. I could be a musician. I could be in a restaurant. I can build a sneaker. Like, is that a surprise? Is like a funny word, but you know what I mean? Like, is this realization hitting you?
It's an interesting one because I know deep down that there's something more important than what we're doing in the companies that we're necessarily starting or the activities that we're engaging in. There's just something more important to it. And to me, that always points back to the individual. In my case, I don't know. There's something pretty special about it, kind of being a life is a big painting of some sort. And these are just particular I think that I've landed on, I don't know how I'm going to get out of this love for footwear and endurance and running and the way it makes me feel. I don't ever want to remove myself from that because just like my family table growing up, I honor things that have changed my life. Running was the single most important thing that gave me purpose on the physical side. As I was becoming cognitively more healthy, running was the physical agoge, so to speak, for the it was the physical part to the mental part. I'm indebted to what it's done for me. So I don't think I'm going to get rid of this brushstroke anytime soon, nor would I ever feel comfortable getting out of the space. I always want to have that. All things considered,
well, why do you think, Michael, why do you think even the most successful people feel like they're imposters?
Yeah, because I think, I think that fear and pain is the greatest motivator. And I think that I also think that low self-esteem is something that we all wrestle with more or less. It's I all think that we have some varying degree of self-esteem. And I think that the world we live in is a very difficult place to navigate sometimes. And to me, it does feel like an imposter syndrome. I feel like an imposter every day when I have to absolutely psych myself up to go talk to people who've been in the industry. Luckily, on like a resume now, I can pretty much say I've got 3 to 5 years experience. Like that makes me feel good. I can walk into a conversation now and be like, yep, you got 3 to 5 years experience. Like, go for it. But frankly speaking, there's a difference between I think that the imposter syndrome is going to, that's going to bubble up somewhere with what we do. It's like our egos and our super egos and our ids and everything that's kind of going on in the psychological nature of our, of ourself, you know? So I just think some folks like myself can identify it, and I don't like it. I don't like low self-esteem. Like, it makes me feel bad, and at one point in time it was life-threatening, and I wasn't okay with that because I knew that I wasn't a good family member, and that wasn't okay. Period. And so I do think that because that's a motivator, I think you're going to have a lot of ideas come from this deficit of people pursuing to kind of, you know, go beyond that. And it's like staring into the great white light. You either turn away from it or you go straight in.
Yeah. I first of all, thank you for being, I guess, so vulnerable and sharing that. I mean, it's not easy to come on a podcast or anything that's being recorded and admit mental challenges, physical challenges, struggles, or anything like that. So, you know, on behalf of everybody listening and myself, like, thank you for just being honest, because hearing that makes it easier for other people, myself included, that when we feel those things, it's like, hey, I'm not alone. Like, Michael was open and honest about it. So, I really appreciate that.
I appreciate you. Absolutely. There was this outpatient group I sat in every week, and to me that was the differentiator. We had to learn how to objectively identify what we're thinking and feeling and be able to say it, and the more that we say it, the more we could communicate.
I think that's incredible. And acknowledge, communicate, say it, be honest with yourself more than anything is key. So I don't want to totally, this is going to be an awkward segue, but I think we've talked deep. We've talked personal, emotional. Let's get back to a high level and just tell us about your company a little bit. We'd be remiss if we didn't just let you take a couple of minutes and tell us about Atreyu. Tell us about, you know, what shoes, where people can find them, where people can find you. Just educate us on the brand that you've created.
Atreyu is a company based out of Austin, Texas. It's a small company. My buddy Jake and Sean, my fiance Lena, my brother Gabe, and we go hard. And I have the privilege and honor of designing products that I personally like to use in the sport that I honor so very much. We create running shoes. We have I obsess about the most recent iteration of the company is a result of my education. And I honor what's called the rotation. I like varying stack heights of shoes. I like varying degrees of increased proprioception by means of rubber versus non-rubber. We create a carbon-plated racing shoe. So we have a rotation. We have a light road-to-trail shoe. We have a daily trainer. We have a utility trainer to fine-tune the running form called the base model. It's great on the treadmill. It's great for a lot of different reasons, and I think it's the soul of the brand. And then we have constantly working on a very singular, simple to understand, intentionally designed running shoe rotation. We're online at atreyu.com, A-T-R-E-Y-U, and we sell currently at REI. And it's been a really cool enter into the retail space, and we've got a lot to learn in the retail space. But again, if anybody's up for it, I think our team is up for understanding the next iteration of that. And yeah, that's what we do. We build running shoes.
You bring a good price point too, right? Isn't that part of the theme?
Absolutely. I see shoes as tools, and I see tools as they should be at the right price. And we do tend to take a smaller margin to some people would say it's affordable, and I'm down with that. I think that running should be accessible for everybody. And it's not designated to beginner or elite or pro. It's actually just designated to what I believe is the right price for the right cadence on a product and a tool that we should be renewing and supplementing in our routine. I love the idea of having varying degrees of shoes kind of so that we can create a rotation of differentiation and let the foot keep guessing. I'm big on foot health. I'm big on running form. I'm bigger on running form than I am on even the shoes. I'm bigger on where we land under our body mass and our center of gravity than I even am on. And that's why there's some intentional designs in there. I'm a big fan of 6mm offsets for that reason. I don't put any excess features. Less is more kind of a guy. And everything we do is trying not to go beyond what is absolutely necessary to provide an experience that extracts the most out of one's stride, one's body, one's routine.
yeah, well, I would say, you know, Don and I've both used them. We've used other. I think the fun part about them is they're also fun looking. You know, they have like a nice look to them.
Yeah, they're goofy.
And they're good design feel versus something that just is purely functional. So I think there's, for the people listening, you know, you can get access to high quality, reasonable price with a good look and great performance. That's why companies like Atreyu are around.
I appreciate that. It's a work in progress. Every day we finally entered into the stage where we get athlete feedback, and we've been able to implement that. You know, it's just a fabulous journey. I love the space.
Yeah, it's a special space to operate in. I think it's really impressive what you're able to do, the quality of the product and the price point, right? Like Joe said it, we've both run in Atreyus. I had Atreyus on my feet for part of my world record run in New York, right? It was the only other shoe I wore than Speedland. And you know, talk about two different ranges of price points, but still two shoes that gave me what I needed to in that moment. So, you know, you brought it up earlier. You have a tattoo of it. Honor simplicity. I think if you keep that ethos alive and you keep using that as your North Star as a company, I truly believe that there's even greater things ahead for what you're going to accomplish in this space.
Well, it would be an honor if I can look back at some point in the journey and say that we've created the max amount of value and impact and kind of in that feeling and that sentiment, I would be thrilled. And I'm already thrilled. To me, I went on the tech repping all the REI stores on the West Coast that our shoes were in, and I told them, I was like, this is the top of the mountain. Everything else from here is learning. Like, I'm not necessarily the giving back phase because we have a lot of work to do, and that's going to come next. But when we enter into the giving back phase, I'll know that the mission has been fully realized. So right now we just got to build our team, take care of our team. One day we're going to afford an office in Austin. That'll be great. But until then, I do. I'm humbled to be toeing the line with the best of them, including Speedland. Dave and Kevin are some of my heroes. Being able to pick up the phone and talk to guys like that is just fabulous. I mean, so like I said, like I'm already getting my needs met. Now it's just, it's like John Mayer said, it's not about being famous. It's not about making a junk ton of money. It's just, he believes in his music and it's about playing it to as many people because he wants to share it with as many people as possible. Right now, it's our job to understand how we can share our message with as many people as possible and like-minded folks that want to get in on the mix.
Yeah. And I think, you know, my question before wasn't that there only is one path. It's actually being very explicit at this moment about what the path is that one would need to go on, because it's always this, you know, analogies, but you know, the trajectory that we start on is the place that we end up. And, you know, if it's 4 degrees right or 4 degrees left, it's ending up in a different place than down the middle. And so I think that there is a place for a product like Atreyu. It doesn't have to have the, you know, the global reach of Nike to have the same kind of impact on
the people. It does not. No, it doesn't.
We want to use it. And so we want to celebrate those who want to stay on this kind of path and support you and figure out how to do that so that, you know, we don't become just so homogenous in the way that all of us go on the journey, that we can be part of something that's more personal and that's what Atreyu can bring.
You know, that's my I love that so much. Just, you nailed it, Joe, because I do think that what people need right now is connection, and when as much connection as possible, authentic connection is a big deal. The world doesn't need another shoe company. There are plenty of great shoes. They're perfect shoes for everybody. You don't need an Atreyu to succeed, period. But I do think that there is a big deficit in connecting with people. And we should do that when we can. And I think it's a great way to do it. And one of the things that I love to honor, which is process and business and creating things and telling stories. And this is just an example of creating that connective tissue. And that's why podcasts, that's why I think that us talking here is just connection. People want to listen to this to feel connected. Mm-hmm. And when we get that opportunity, I don't ever think that that's, you don't have, you, there's no win or lose on the back end of that. There's just the pursuit.
Yeah, so I think, you know, look, I think we have a lot of people who hopefully are going to go online and get their first pair of Atreyus for sure. We want that to happen. We're going to stay in touch, Michael. You know the name of this podcast, when we kicked it off, Chasing Tomorrow. And while we do live in the present, you know, a lot of the spirit of what you're doing is about creating a better tomorrow for all of us. Mm. If we had more Michaels in this world, we would have a better world. So thanks for who you are and what you're doing. What's you know, give us just a quick summary on, as we end up and wrap up here, on like what's next for you and Atreyu. What's going to happen over, you know, 2023? What, you know, give us the highlights.
I've gotten through a lot of the biggest hurdles I needed to get through, which is financially, kind of understanding how to take care of my business, and or it just even understanding the needs of the nuts and bolts of the doing business part. It's been a rough 3 years, and I think we've learned a lot, and I think we're out of that first little area, and I think that we have the tools and the resources to make educated decisions going forward. As far as where we're going from here, my sole job and the way that I see my mission is absolutely and fundamentally to make sure that every piece of our message is aligned and it's communicating our values of simplicity, dedication, you know, running, and celebrating the sport and honoring the sport. Like, my job is to constantly understand how we can do a better job articulating that message and making it clear. So that's where I see us going. I think that I'm going to work on the products, and I think that there's a duty to work on the products because I never want to put people at a disadvantage. And I think we have great products. And I can say that just because, like, I use them and I build products that I want to use, and I use them at a pretty high level, at a dedicated level, not in a leader pro, but in a very dedicated level. And at the same time, I think what's next will be some very, very cool ways that we're going to uncover as a brand on how to tell great stories. And we will begin to tell great stories because I want to be known for those. That's what I want to be known for. That's a big task. And I think I'm going to spend the next year doing it.
Okay. There's the commitment. You're coming back in a year. Yep. You're going to tell us 5 stories, and Don and I are just going to listen and appreciate you and the stories. So
let's go. Let's have it. Well, I would be thrilled to do that. Don and Joe, y'all are two of the most, you know, just amazing people. And you've shown nothing but welcomeness and love, and even getting the invite, Don, to go run the Grand Canyon with you. I didn't tell anybody this, but that was, I think, Joe, I even got your pep talk on that before I did that. I was scared shitless, man. And I didn't think I could keep up. But at the deep, what got me there was the fact that you were welcoming, you were generous and kind with your time, and you changed my life because of that experience. And I'm humbled to have participated in it with you. And I will never forget that.
Oh man, I appreciate that. It's, I mean, you said the word earlier, right? It's community. Like when I'm, I don't know, 80 years old, I'm not going to remember running fast. I'm not going to remember the track workouts. I'm going to remember the experiences running through the Grand Canyon with friends. And
that's it.
Like that's what it's all about for me.
Hanging out at the aid station at Leadville with Joe. The weatherman.
Mountain. Yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah. Well let's Michael, all. Let's all make some more memories like that this year. There's many, many memories to be made, I think, with these three and people listening, and many, many stories yet to be written.
Well, thank you for your time, both of you.
All right. We'll see you soon.